Wake up, America. Time to stump the experts. Each week at this time, H.J. Hines Company, makers of the 57 varieties, gives you information, please. A quartet of experts is on hand to answer your questions. Send them to information, please, at 570 Lexington Avenue, New York 22, New York. We may edit them a bit, and in case of similarity, you'll have to accept our judgment of who shall be paid. Please note that if this year we use your question, which is postmarked any time between now and December 31st, you will get not the usual $10 in war stamps, but a $50 war bond, plus a set of the 12-volume Britannica Junior Encyclopedia. If we muff the question, you get, in addition, $57 in war bonds and stamps, plus a 24-volume set of the regular Encyclopedia Britannica. All questions remain our property. Information, please, is presented under the supervision of Dan Golenpaul. And now, our master of ceremonies, Clifton Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, continuing as ever on its unrehearsed and spontaneous path, Information Please tonight presents its veteran pair, Franklin P. Adams and John Kieran of the New York Sun. The day after tomorrow is Navy Day, and to signalize the great tradition of that branch of the service, we've arranged to have with us as our guests tonight two brilliant writers, former New York drama critics, and now both serving as lieutenants in the Navy. They are Lieutenant Richard Lockridge and Lieutenant John Mason Brown, whose new book, To All Hands, will be published soon. And this is in the way of an advance tip, for I have read To All Hands, and ladies and gentlemen, it is good. Is that all right, John?
Oh, no, go on.
All I'm going to say about it at the moment. We're going to start with a question from Mrs. John G. Rolfe of New York City. A three-part question, and we have to get two out of three. If an actor asked for these items before going on stage, what role would he be playing? You have to identify the actor from these stage props. Suppose he required black silk mittens, a black lace cap, and a cigar. Lieutenant Brown.
Charlie Vann.
That's quite right. Very good. That's how he's dressed. What's his name in the play? Now, that's the play, of course.
Charlie Vann.
Yes, but he has a real name, too, you know. You remember it, Mr. Adams?
No, I never saw it.
You never saw it? Too recent for you? Mr. Kieran? Lord Fancourt Beverly. Lord Fancourt Beverly. Now, suppose the actor, before going on stage, accumulated the following articles of costume: a tropical helmet, a bugle, and a pince-nez. Mr. Kieran?
That would be the chap who plays, who thinks he's Teddy Roosevelt in Arsenic and Old Lace.
That's quite right, yes. Teddy Brewster is his name in the play. Now, suppose the character asked for a gold compact, a black compact, and a pair of tweezers. The character would be? Any idea? Lieutenant Lockridge.
I have a faint idea. Mrs. North.
Yes, you needn't be modest about it, Lieutenant Lockridge. Why would Mrs. North need those props?
Well, that'd be very complicated. It was all involved in the plot, and I don't remember the plot.
You are merely the author of it. Your memory doesn't extend to actually remembering. Well, I would go into it for a small sum of money, of course, Lieutenant Lockridge, but I will not. At any rate, Lieutenant Lockridge is quite right. His character, Mrs. North, in his famous series, written by himself and his wife, Mr. and Mrs. North, needs those props before going on stage in the play. Now, how about this one from John F. Tarantino of Bridgeport, Connecticut? What does the letter stand for in each of these phrases? Each of them contains a letter of the alphabet. Battleship X would recall what to you? Battleship X. Does the phrase ring a bell? Even a faint tinkle? No? The USS South Dakota was called Battleship X in reports of the Savo Bay fight, which took place some months ago. And this Battleship X was recently disclosed as being the Dakota. Does that come back to any of you, Lieutenant Lockridge?
Yes, comes back very clearly now.
Well, that shows the advantage of my being able to read it off a card. That gives us one wrong. M-Day would mean what to you gentlemen? M-Day. Mr. Kieran?
Well, M-Day is a day set for a big movement, probably the jump into Sicily or into Italy.
Well, would the M there stand for a movement, do you think?
I think so. You have the zero hour, H hour, whatever you want to call it.
Yes, but that...
M-Day is mobilization day, too. For any, you can...
How about sticking to that one, Mr. Kieran? Just keep going.
Well, M-Day in the general plan, I believe, originally was mobilization day.
Yeah, shall we forget the first part of your statement?
D-Day is the other, I think, for an attack or a movement.
Well, mobilization day is right. Those are the blueprints presumably prepared by the War Department in the event of mobilization being needed. But H hour would mean what? H hour now, Lieutenant Brown?
H hour would be the hour of attack on such a day as D-Day.
Yes. And was that phrase used, for example, in the recent Sicilian invasion?
It was. D-Day.
Yes, quite right.
H-hour.
Well, that gives us 2 out of 3. Try this one from Mrs. F.D. Hunt of Riverside, California. This is about famous kisses, either of fact or fiction. We have to get 2 kisses out of 3. In one case, a kiss that gave a husband away. Gave a husband away, unmasked him, shall we say. That might be in a play. Of the last few years or so. A play, presumably, that the lieutenants once saw in the exercise of their professional, shall we say, duties. Does it come back to Lieutenant Lockridge, Lieutenant Brown, and the guardsman, the actress?
Oh.
Now, Lieutenant Brown, can you help us out?
Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
Because this was when, I have to go back in terms of actors, this was the Lunts.
All right.
And Alfred Lunt was dressed up as a guardsman to find out about his wife. And at the moment, the giveaway was the fact that though he looked different, spoke in a different voice, and transferred in a different way when he kissed, he couldn't change his identity.
Yes. Do you think there's a good deal of...
They seemed to be happy there afterwards, the Lunts did, so it's all right.
That's right. I'm afraid I did sort of deposit that in your lap, though.
But keep on.
I can't give you credit for it. Now, how about a kiss that caused a resurrection, that caused someone to come to life? What kiss was that?
Fact or fiction?
Yes, either
one. That was the Sleeping Beauty.
Yes, that's right. Who did the kissing?
The prince.
The prince? What had happened to Sleeping Beauty in the story?
Oh, she had fallen asleep. Oh, well, there's 2 tales. One is by Tennyson, and I don't know by whom the other is.
Well, Grimm wrote a story about Sleeping Beauty, but I bet a hat that you're referring to the Walt Disney version, because that's the one most of us know.
Well, I know the Tennyson version a little better.
Well, Disney will be very sorry to hear it. Yes, it's in probably both of those versions, the Sleeping Beauty, who has been put into a sort of paralytic trance through eating an apple, is brought back to life by the kiss of a prince. How about a kiss that made a pagan girl forget her religion? What kiss was that? Lieutenant Lockridge.
That's from the road to Mandalay, since you forgot something when I kissed her where she stood.
Yes, that's right. Plucky lot, she cared for idols when I kissed her where she stood, and that's the kiss bestowed on... What's the name of the girl? Does anyone remember the girl? In case she pops up again, Mr. Kieran?
Still Supiola.
Still Supiola.
Seaboy's queen.
That's quite right. And that gives us 2 out of 3. Try this from Ensign Elizabeth Winspear. Oh, a female colleague of yours, Lieutenant, of Washington, D.C. This will be a musical question. Each of the following songs that you're going to hear played was heard in a play. And in each case, it figured in the plot. It had something to do with the action, affected it in some way. See how good your dramatic memories are. Let's have the first. Does the naval life just destroy the memory of your former existences, Lieutenants?
Apparently. Richard Watts would know the answer to this.
I know, but we haven't got Dick Watts here. You'll have
but
to do
I
the duty
the
for
answers.
Us. Mr. Adams, that didn't happen to be the one play you've seen?
I don't know what the tune is.
Well, that's better than Lieutenants over here. They didn't even know have enough sense to say that.
Maybe it was by Noel Coward.
No, it's from Lady in the Dark. It's I think the tune is called My Ship. Composed by Kurt Weill, and it's the clue to the maladjustment of the main character in Lady in the Dark. As she hears the song, it recalls events in her early life as a child. Does that come back to you now, Lieutenant?
Yes, all the schoolroom stuff and the mother's jealousy.
That's right. Fascinating thing, the drama, when you can remember it.
Well,
that gives us one wrong. Send us on to the next one. Now, Lieutenant Brown.
I'm getting musical. If it's about my speed, that's Noel Coward.
Yeah.
But someday I'll find you. I have a private life.
Attaboy. And how does it figure in the plot?
Well, that had been sort of a little alcove song, and they had sung it back and forth to one another.
Yeah.
And they... I took it back to Mr. and Mrs. North. It's sort of complicated.
Well, you've done
the
very
two
well.
Divorced couples.
Yeah.
Remarried.
Right.
Met, heard the song, and they're just like the kiss in the other case, the ear told in this.
Well, you're quite in the vein. Very good. Yes, that's quite right. And now the third and last. Have you thrown that one to Lieutenant Lockridge, Lieutenant Brown, Mr. Kieran?
I know what the song is, but I didn't see the play that who.
That's the song. That's quite right.
Who stole my heart away?
That's the song, Mr. Kieran, but in what play does it figure and how?
This isn't Sally, by any chance.
No, it's, I think the song originally appeared in Sonny. I don't know, many years ago. But it was used as part of the plot in Thurber and Nugent's play, The Male Animal. It's the song to which the boy and girl had danced at a college affair once and to which they dance again. Does that come back to either of you?
Not in the least.
But when you see these plays year after year and they make no impression on your minds at all?
Very little, apparently. Could I ask you some questions about books?
Not on this program, Lieutenant Brown. Well, that gives us two wrong, and that sends an Encyclopedia Britannica to Ensign Elizabeth Winspear and $57 in war bonds and stamps. I'll try this one for Mrs. Howard Clark of Springdale, Arkansas. Can you give us three quotations that might be applicable in the current campaign against loose talk? I don't mean button up your lip, but I mean a quotation from poetry, perhaps, or from any classical reference that might be applied to Mr. Adams.
Silence is golden.
Very good, Mr. Adams. Lieutenant Brown.
The rest is silence.
The rest is silence is okay. From
Hamlet.
Hamlet. And is there a third quotation, Mr. Kieran? Thinking hard over there?
I can't think of one.
Or are you exemplifying the moral that we're trying to put over here? Well, as give every Mr.
Quote, the raven nevermore.
That's all right. That's all right. Mr. Kieran?
You get half credit on this. You said give every. That's enough. Give every man thine ear, but few thy voice.
Very good.
Polonius.
Very good. Please don't talk about me when I'm gone is a popular song. And there's a line from A. E. Houseman, from The Shropshire Lad, that applies very well. Perhaps it's from Last Poems. Be still, my soul, be still. The arms you bear are brittle. Any of those would do. And now here's Ben Grauer, our Heinz reporter. Ben seems to have been positively inspired by the fact that butter is now 16 points a pound. And this evening he has another new idea for buttering up the family meals when there is no butter.
You're wrong on just one point, Mr. Fadiman. The idea I want to talk about was old, tried, and heartily approved way back in Grandfather's day. I just want to remind the folks of the old-fashioned country way to serve vegetables, with a hot, spiced, vinegary dressing that you make from those savory, smoke-flavored juices that stay in the pan after bacon has been fried. Pour that dressing on your string beans, beets, or spinach, and you'll never miss butter. Up Vermont way, they serve bacon dressing and carrots, too. It's really wonderful, and it's such an easy thing to make. Just get the bacon juices and vinegar bubbling hot. Use twice as much vinegar as bacon fat. Then stir in some Heinz mustard, enough to suit your own taste. You'll find that Heinz mustard gives body and a creamy smoothness to the dressing. It adds that rich tang of special stone-ground mustard and spices so rare and aromatic they're practically in the treasure class. Yet for all its rare ingredients and flavor, Heinz mustard is a thrifty buy. You'll spend only a few pennies and no ration stamps to get Heinz genuine stone-ground mustard. I hope you'll do that little thing right soon.
Thank you, Ben Grauer. And now we'll go on with a question from Anne Sugar of New York City. Because of the war, gentlemen, what item has been omitted or curtailed from the following? What item has been omitted from children's panties? Children's panties? Does that come up, Mr. Adams?
Rubber.
Yes. Where is the rubber generally in the panties? What part of the panties is made
of rubber? Don't remember.
Mr. Kieran?
You mean a little babies, panties all over?
Well, I'm not thinking of that kind of panty, no. You're thinking of
used to be around and boys' knickerbockers around the knees.
Yes.
Hold their stockings.
Yes. Also, I guess the elastic, isn't it around the waist, too? They have a little elastic around the waist. There isn't any more of that. Now, how about something that's been omitted from women's dresses on account of the war? Lieutenant Lockridge.
Metal zippers.
Yes.
I presume there's a substitute provided. And hair tonic. What's missing from hair tonic?
Hair.
Well, that isn't a wartime problem, Lieutenant Brown, Mr. Adams.
Probably alcohol.
Yes, alcohol. You say that with a great sadness. Yes, the alcohol is curtailed. I don't know that it's omitted. I believe there was a certain amount left. That gives us 3 out of 3. Try this one from James Ritchie of Jamaica Plain, Massachusetts. I think you ought to get all on this. It's a very easy one. 3 detectives of fiction order their favorite stimulants, but the addresses are confused in the delivery. I'm going to ask you to correct the errors and name the detective to whom each package should be delivered. For example, and this is the first part, a case of beer is sent to East 38th Street to a detective presumably living there. That's wrong. Where should it go, Mr. Acheron?
It should go to Nero Wolfe.
Yes? On what street?
Well, I don't know where his address is. I'm sorry.
Well, that's
Nero, the publisher would get him.
That's quite right. Nero Wolfe, Rex Stout's famous character, who lives on West 35th Street and is a great beer drinker, as Mr. Acheron indicates. Now, how about this situation of bad delivery? A case of Napoleon brandy goes to Baker Street. That's wrong. Why? Mr. Adams?
Well, I just know by indirection that Sherlock Holmes did not drink Napoleon brandy.
That's quick figuring. That's very quick figuring. Where should it
Who
go?
Who did? I don't know.
Lieutenant Lockridge, can you help us out? Thought I saw your hand up.
No,
Lieutenant Brown?
No, no.
Napoleon brandy should go to Philo Vance, S.S. Van Dyne's famous detective character, who lives on East 38th Street.
I thought kicking the pants went to him.
Only in Ogden Nash's poem.
Yeah.
That was a very special delivery indeed. That gives us one wrong. Now, how about this? A vial of cocaine is delivered to West 35th Street. Lieutenant Lockridge.
That goes to Sherlock.
Yes, in what
Baker
street? In Baker Street. That's quite right. That gives us 2 out of 3. Cocaine, I presume, is a stimulant? Never tired? That gives us 2 out of 3. And sent us on to this one from Gerard Urick of Atlanta, Georgia. Again, I think we should get all. By what names or titles are the following commonly known? John Churchill is more commonly known. Mr. Kieran.
Duke of Marlborough.
Quite right. Duke of Marlborough. He has a famous descendant. Who is that?
Winston Churchill.
Winston Churchill, yes. Eric Weiss. More commonly known as Eric Weiss. Oh, it's a name that everyone listening, I'm sure, knows, and that each of you 4 knows. Houdini, the great magician, had a real name, Eric Weiss. And finally, Mephitis nigra, M-E-P-H-I-T-I-S, Mr. Kieran.
A skunk.
Yes, a skunk, that's right. Where do you generally find skunks in our country? And no quacks, Mr. Kieran.
around the barnyard or in the woods.
I mean, is the habitat throughout the United States?
Oh, yes. It? There are various varieties.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm crazy about the subject.
They all agree in one strong point.
My information tells me that they're commonly found in the northeast United States, around our section of the country.
Well, that's the Negro. That's
that particular one.
You find them on Route 105, Connecticut.
In the road leading to your house?
Mm-hmm.
Use them as signposts to you, Mr. Adams? That gives us 2 out of... No, that gives us only 2 out of 3. We should have gotten all. That sends $57 in war bonds and stamps from Mr. York and a set of the Encyclopedia Britannica and sends us on to a question from Mr. Thomas Callan of Milwaukee. It's a very simple question. Recite a line of poetry which includes these words. The first set of words is good friend. A line of poetry, Mr. Adams?
Good friend, for Jesus' sake, forbear.
Very good. How does it go on?
To something the bones
interred
here.
Help out, Mr. To dig the dust interred here. Blessed be the man who spares these bones, stones, and cursed be he who moves my bones.
Yes. What's Mr. Adams been quoting from?
He is quoting from the doggerel, usually and wrongly ascribed to Shakespeare, under the wall tomb in Stratford Church.
You know for sure that Shakespeare didn't write those words.
Well, it doesn't. If he did, he certainly slipped.
Well, it might from time to time. Dramatic critics do. Why not playwrights?
Well, but not that bad.
Although, as Mr.
Adams... I haven't written that meter either.
Thank you.
Well, you boys are working together tonight. I can see that. Well, now we've had good friend traced for us. How about better friend? A line of poetry with the phrase, better friends, to Adams again.
Old dog Tray.
That's the one. What's the complete line?
Old dog Tray, ever faithful. Grief cannot drive him away. A better friend than old dog Tray.
Came out strong at the finish there, Mr. Adams. Very good. And now we've had good friend and better friend, we want best friend. Mr. Kieran.
A man's best friend is his mother.
Yes.
A boy's best friend is his mother.
Yes, a boy's best friend is his mother. Does anyone know where the line comes from or who wrote it? One of the most famous of lines. I guess it appears in an old popular song. Mr. Adams, has it come back to you?
No.
Well, nobody disputes the sentiment anyway. That gives us three friends out of three. And now our Heinz reporter, Ben Grauer, can find a timely hint on eating, even in a 16th century play. Would you tell us about it, Ben?
The other night I ran across a play that Bishop John Still wrote way back in the 1500s. I was struck by the timeliness of his opening line. I cannot eat but little meat. Well, with point values the way they are today, that states the case for most of us. But one thing that meat rationing has done is to give us a new appreciation of some of the less stylish kinds of meat, like the hot dog, for instance. There's some mighty good eating in a plump hot dog grilled to a turn, crackling brown and just about ready to burst with meaty goodness. And when you add a generous swirl of Heinz fine mustard, well, there's a meat dish that even the gourmet King Louis himself should have been proud to spear with his golden fork. And no monarch ever had a finer mustard than the kind that bears Heinz 57 label. Heinz mustard is made from a special type of seed, ground in stone mills to give finer texture and flavor and blended with mellow Heinz vinegar. Heinz genuine stone ground mustard is a real luxury condiment, yet it costs only a few cents and no ration points.
Thank you, Ben Grauer. That was good, wasn't it, Frank? It's going to be tough for you to wait another 5 minutes, I can see that. Try this one from Maurice E. Pelube of West Orange, New Jersey, and again get 2 out of 3. Can you name a play or opera in which a poet uses his verses, in this case, to wrap up pastry? Lieutenant Brown.
Still, I don't know.
Well, is he the one who does the wrapping?
Oh, there's a poet, though, who does the wrapping, too.
Yeah.
He's using the pastry shop.
That's quite right. What's his name?
Ragano.
Ragano is right, yes. The pastry cook, Ragano. Does he do it willingly, Mr. Kieran?
Never shortage.
That is not his own poetry, however.
It is not?
No, that's the poetry of his friends who exchange their poetry for cakes in his bakery shop.
That's right.
Apologize.
The only specimen poem that he produced in there was a receipt for cooking tartlets.
But it is in rhyme, isn't it?
Yes, but he didn't give that one away.
That's the perfect answer. Now, how about this? In this case, a poet uses his verses to keep warm. He burns them in a fireplace. Not a bad idea. Mr. Adams.
Well, there's one in Roads of Destiny where a poet burns his verses.
O. Henry's story?
O. Henry's story.
Ah, you have me there. I didn't know that.
Not to keep warm.
I think it's done in La Boheme.
Yes, Rodolfo, the poet, burns his verses.
Mm-hmm.
Quite possibly Mr. Adams is right about...
He didn't do it to keep warm. He just didn't like him very well.
Now, can you name a play in which a poet uses his verses to decorate trees with? Decorate trees with? Lieutenant Brown?
Run, Run, Orlando. It's As You Like It.
Yes, that's right. What's the purpose of the... putting the verses up on the trees.
He's so lovesick that he writes the card on every tree, the fair, the chase, the inexpressive she, unexpressive she. Whatever.
Quite right. It's a form of advertisement, I suppose. How about, well, that gives us 3 out of 3. Try this one from Richard W. Armour of Aurora on Cayuga, New York. Mention 3 people whose names indicate some mental characteristic. For example, the famous English liberal John Bright might be one, but you can't have that one. Give me 3 others.
Famous people?
Well...
Characters, all people?
Characters, yes. Lieutenant Lockridge?
Judge Learned Hand.
Judge Learned Hand, that's a very good one, yes. Mr. Kieran?
Ken Strong, the football player.
Ken Strong. Strong, the mental characteristic. Yes, I suppose strength is a kind of mental characteristic. Mr. Adams?
Stephen Wise.
Stephen Wise, yes. How about John Greenleaf Whittier, by leaving out the H, Mr. Kieran?
Christopher Smart.
Christopher Smart, Kit Smart, the poet, quite right. There's a Mr.
Christopher Sly.
Christopher Sly is very good. Peter Schlemiel, Lieutenant Brown. Dame May Whitty. Oh, there are a number of others that you might mention. That was just a vacation question. Here's a tougher one. This is from Richard C. Burge of New York City. And it's a Shakespeare question. Who rewrote a story originally treated by Shakespeare in order to make it conform with Aristotle's rules for writing drama? Lieutenant Brown.
Dryden.
Quite right. What was the story?
All for Love.
Yes.
Anthony and Cleopatra.
Anthony and Cleopatra. And how did he change the story in general? I don't want you to go through the plot.
Well, he observed the unities.
What are the unities, Lieutenant Brown?
Action, time, and place.
Yes, I see you're fully equipped to become a reviewer of plays in case the situation is worsened for you.
Oh, but the unity is like the Critics' Circle have gone down the drain.
Oh, we haven't mentioned the Critics' Circle. Who rewrote Shakespeare for children? Mr. Adams?
Charles Lamb.
And Mary.
And Mary Lamb.
Yes, don't forget his sister. Charles and Mary Lamb rewrote the... All of the Shakespeare plays, were they, or just some of them? I don't remember.
Just some of them.
Just some, for children. How about someone who rewrote Shakespeare for a musical comedy?
Oh.
Lieutenant Lockridge? Does that come back to you, Lieutenant Brown?
There was a swing, or a hot version of the Dream, the Midsummer Night's Dream.
Yes, that's right. And there's still another, Mr. Kieran?
The one who wrote The Boys from Syracuse.
Yes, George Abbott, Dick Rogers, and Lorenz Hart. What play was that based on?
Comedy of Errors.
Comedy of Errors, yes. He's a rather active collaborator, this Shakespeare fellow. Useful to writers. How about this one from Anne Robinson of Baltimore? Where, in fact or fiction, did a soldier recite these lines before going into battle? The boast of heraldry, the pomp of power, Miss Kieran?
That was Wolfe before the Battle of Quebec, in which he fell mortally wounded.
That's quite right. And who quoted, "The time has come," the walrus said, and so forth, in a play? Lieutenant Brown.
That is Journey's End.
Quite right. Osborne and Alice. And the quote is from?
Alice.
That's quite right. And who quoted this? And sang within the bloody wood when Agamemnon cried aloud and let their liquid droppings fall to stain the stiff, dishonored shroud. That's a tough one. It's from The Eve of St. Mark. A character in Maxwell Anderson's play quotes it, and the quote is from T.S. Eliot, and that gives us 2 out of 3, and that's all we'll have time for. Thank you, Lieutenant Brown, and thank you, Lieutenant Lockridge, for the ship-shaped help this evening. Tonight, H.J. Hines Company has paid out $114 in war bonds and stamps and 2 sets of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Next week, the trio of Levant, Kieran, and Adams will be reunited and will welcome as its guest the author of the runaway best-selling novel of the season, A Tree Grows in Brooklyn, Miss Betty Smith. Remember, send your questions with the correct answers to information, please, 5-